Hello, and welcome back to another episode of SLA, Second Language Acquisition for Everyone. Today, we got me, Bill, and...
Benjamin!
Yay! And we're going to be talking a little bit about shared reading and what that looks like. I think the study that we have this week is in early childhood context, but let's see what we can do to bring their research findings to our classrooms and how it might be beneficial. But before we jump in, couple reminders. We are currently, this recorded during week two of the book study. So make sure to be following along on all of our socials where we're doing our best to do this book study. It's been another crazy start to the school year, so I think we'll settle in soon, but we appreciate everyone that's participated, and we sincerely appreciate the patience as we try to balance all these things.
Chapter 2 of Proficiency-Based Instruction, Teaching Grammar for Proficiency, hit some cognitive malfunctioning barriers in me and Bill's working and personal lives. I'm starting school this week. Today was my first full day of school, for instance. And Bill has had a family night, like, at his school, and just, like, so many things going on. So chapter two, the questions will be appearing. They should be there now and kind of caught up in the rhythm that we had expected. And then look out for chapter three in the week that begins on this date that I'm about to tell you. On the week beginning September 15th.
Wonderful. Additionally, if you're finding any value in listening to us yap about language teaching, we would really appreciate some support. It does cost a little bit of money to do this podcast, and while we are free to do it, a little assistance would not be turned away. So check out slaypod.com if you'd like to just give us a little bit of monetary support. And if you can't give us any monetary support, go ahead and head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening and leave us a review. We love it. So, all right. Like I said, today we are talking about shared reading. And so that I don't misquote, what would you call the definition of shared reading in this context?
The study that we're looking at today specifically looks at shared reading of children's books in an early childhood dual language immersion context. So we're going to be talking about, neither Bill nor I work in such a context, but we're going to be extrapolating the results and the kind of discussion in this paper to the shared reading of any book. So picture books, authentic children's books from the cultures, even just like visual storytelling, those sorts of techniques by which we bring classic stories to our students.
Yeah. So to gaslight ourselves, I think, so I mean, one, I just don't do this. Or at least not as often, or at least not as thoughtfully, perhaps. And like, I'm thinking about the children's books, and in the CCLT world, something that I've at least known about, even though I haven't done it very much, but known about since the very beginning of like my teaching career, has been something that is affectionately called Kindergarten Day. And in Kindergarten Day, the teacher reads a storybook to the class, regardless of the grade that they are in, acting as if we're just little five-year-olds again, just like gathering around for circle time and reading a story together. And I know some people like really, really play into the Kindergarten Day aspect of it. So like telling kids, bring a blanket or bring a stuffed animal or something, just bring snacks. And I will say, like, when I have done it, kids like it. Like, it's just like a silly, goofy change, like, from the rest of the day, cause especially because I'm in high school. Doing something like Kindergarten Day does kind of give the kids permission to be kids instead of trying too hard to be adults. And I mean, it can be fun. And I think if we're considering doing something like a kindergarten day, I think something that's important to remember is that kids' books, especially authentic kids' books, are not written for kids to read. They're typically written for parents or caregivers to read to children so that they can like explain all of the pictures and everything in like leveled up language for the kid, but still like appropriate. Like when a parent reads a book to a little kid, they're doing all the voices and everything. So they're using a lot of techniques to make sure that the story is comprehensible. But typically, I think storybooks aren't typically written for the kids to read, but a story to be read to kids. So
can I comment on the things?
Yeah, of course.
Yes, Bill, you touched on two things, two kind of separate issues that I think might prevent teachers from doing this most effectively, especially at the secondary level where both of us live. One of them is just the kind of the time aspect or personality. Maybe that's two different aspects, is like, when do I build this into my busy curriculum where I have to get kids to this grammar point, to this next thing, or I've got jam-packed content kind of one after the another? And I think it's worth remembering that we teach humans who go through cycles of moods and needs, and sometimes they need a little bit of something that is less, I don't want to say rigorous, because it would still be rigorous to listen to a children's story in your second or additional language, but something that allows their brains to relax just a little bit before we load them up with other new content and information and language. And so, yeah, we're teaching humans, and we're teaching a lot of aspects of them, like social life. It's not just about grinding language into their brains. It's also about enjoying the language sometimes and enjoying how much we understand and enjoying the experience of, like, kindergarten was enjoyable because you shared those story experiences and your reactions and your thoughts with your peers and with your teacher. So I think that it is the time investment. You also don't have to be the biggest goof in the world, the biggest, you know, playful person. I think just watch a solid elementary school teacher doing a read aloud to your students, and you will get a lot of techniques and also a lot of different ideas about how that can happen without you having to be an entertainer. You might get to just enjoy the book and the thoughtful questioning as much as the students do. The other one, when you touch on the kids' book not being for language learners, I think a misconception that I had is that I had to read the words on the page of the kids' book. So if I had book, like this is especially true when I was teaching Spanish, I have fewer German kids' books now, but when I had a lot of Spanish kids' books, they're a little bit easier to find in the United States. I would like look at the words on the page and I was like, oh, I need to make sure they know the super random word. But sometimes the words are like super low frequency because it's, you know, something random. You know, it's like, oh, this is his specialized medieval weapon. And you're like, okay, like they don't need to actually know that. They need to know maybe the word weapon, which is like a category word. And so I think that to piggyback off what you said, like you reading the words of the page might not actually be the best use of the time. It might be better to use the book as a context to do something that's more akin to picture talk or, you know, just simplified narration or something else.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I know that like my Latin colleague has some kids' books that he's just like he's went through and printed, like he typed up alternative text, printed it, and like taped all the phrases into the book because I don't know if you know this or not, but there's not really that many Latin texts being produced. So for children, of course, there are great Latin teachers that are producing great stories. As far as like the children's book, availability of children's books in Latin, I think probably is a little less so than a modern language. I do think like also something that, full disclosure, I was only able to peruse the article this week. My classes are like wrapping up. And then, like you said, I had parent night, and it was a short week, which means it's a super long week. If you know, you know. But something that I think I also don't do that well or as often as I would like is like really reading through something together with a student, because I always get like self-conscious that they're just bored out of their mind if I'm the one reading. But at the same time, I've got like reservations about, I mean, like, I don't mind popcorn reading if it's done equitably. And no offense to my students, but they're slow readers in Spanish. Then, like, if we're passing it off and people are reading out loud, then sometimes that just takes more time than what I would like to spend on it. But on the other side of it, if students are at least seeming more invested in the activity, then it's fine. But I do like to make sure to like read through things with students because there's so much we can talk about from like linguistically or culturally that we can bring up when we're reading something together. And I really like making sure to have that those experiences where I to really just ask a bunch of circling questions on a text. Like, I want the text to be easy and be, and I want us to be able to answer some, you know, surface level questions on it. And I'm not 100% convinced that students are always reading in a way that is helping them process the language.
Totally. I think that's totally fair. And it's funny, you're touching on one of the issues that in the discussion, or actually during the kind of their discussion of the results in the paper, they touch on that teachers need guidelines or ways to look at text and didacticize them to turn them into useful texts, you know, useful experiences for their students. And that there are some foundations that they list in the study that talk about storybook reading specifically. But I think, yeah, if you are worried that like going into reading a text altogether is just going to turn into you reading it out loud, and then you get to the end of a very long piece of text and it's dead silent and everyone looks tired and stuff. Yeah, I think I would be worried that kids would tune out as well. And I think it's important to remember that like maybe engagement looks different and maybe they are highly cognitively engaged in a way that is not super visible. On the flip side, we also want to make the most of our limited minutes with our students. So how can we really get the most out of those? So yeah, that is touched on in this paper, I think is totally a totally fair thing. If we are reading aloud a lot, then we want to make sure that the students are also doing the cognitive work.
Right. All right. Anything else about gaslighting ourselves with this?
It's a launch into the article when you're ready.
All right, well, let's go ahead and get into the article. So, Ben, what do we have this week?
This week we have read Shared Reading for Enhancing Receptive Vocabulary in Early Second Language Education, a study of preschool children in a Polish-German bilingual program. This is by Olpinska from the University of Warsaw in Poland. I believe this was on Neofilolog is the name of the journal, if I'm reading correctly. And here's what they were looking at. They were aware of the research on picture book reading to students. It brings a lot of new vocab and increases listening comprehension and narrative skill in younger students. It teaches them vocabulary, it teaches them grammar, it teaches them pragmatics, how language is used. But it also is infused with emotion and social and moral value. So what specific effects and some other things were there? Take that back. Don't include that. Storybooks are also aesthetic products that offer opportunities for interpretation. So going beyond just looking at what's in the book and seeing what's on the page, you can extend the narrative and extend a conversation with students about morality, about the events, and increase students' language capacities in those ways. There's been a lot of research about how storybook reading can increase children's knowledge of the world. It promotes social skills. They get a lot of verbal and nonverbal information from the books. It's just really important part of especially young readers' cognitive development. And it creates a rich language environment for students. A quote that I really liked from the text on page 188 was, "Pleasure in learning is considered a necessary foundation for successful learning outcomes." I forget who in the comprehensible input world says that, but essentially the path of pleasure is the only path. So we need contextualized language. We know it's strong for developing that context and that there are many ways to milk a storybook. It's a familiar activity, so it like feels comfortable and good, but that pleasure is actually a plus, not a potential minus. So it provides a lot of reps of good vocabulary. And something just an interesting aside as part of the literature review, it was talking about the repetition of vocabulary, and that there was a study from 2015 by Horst that when students heard the same new word three times within a single story, they retained it better than students who had heard that same word over three different stories. So the repetition within the story helped kind of really keep it in students' minds. And later, students need greater depth of vocabulary knowledge by hearing it in new contexts. But if we want to really drill it in, it has to be, you know, repeated in this book. And part of that is the storybook reading aspect of it.
I think that a really good point. I've gotten the question before, like, how many repetitions does it take for someone to acquire a word? And like, it's just like such a wide range. Super compelling words might take one repetition. Like my students heard the word caca once. For not Spanish speakers, caca is poop. My students heard caca once and now they know it. But then like on the other side, like you get words like in Spanish, there is or there are. That is like a really abstract word that I use it every single day. And it's just because it's an abstract word, like an action that you can see, like that one just takes more repetitions. But also like the point that you brought up about like seeing the word three times in a single story versus over spaced out, like that is validating to me. I think that like doing some kind of input flooding of using the same words over and over, knowing that that has shown like positive results, it's kind of validating. I like to think of it as like jump starting acquisition. Like we want to see these words a lot right now to like jumpstart it. Because like the study that I most often refer to, and I forget who it's from, it's probably either Nation or Barcroft. They do a lot of work on vocabulary acquisition, but I remember reading it's like 8 exposures to a word, like in reading or audibly, orally, whatever, auditory, like 8 times has shown that like that's after that you can maybe start recognizing it on your own. But that doesn't necessarily mean have the word like in a productive sense. So that's something that I've seen quite a bit, that like there's kind of studies on how many repetitions of a word you need to receptively understand it. But in order to produce it, that those numbers are like all over the place. Those ones I've seen from like 10 to 175. It's really like variable based on the individuals and whatnot, but good to know that using the same word in like a singular context was more helpful than spaced repetition of it.
Right. And I want to be clear to our listeners that like this is relative, right? Like
right.
They retain it better. There was not specifics in this study. This is part of their literature review. There was not specifics in the study of what that means when we say they retain it better. But again, like you said, to extrapolate back to our context, getting those mass repetitions of terms from the get that we know are new to our students, and then introducing them in other contexts to promote the transfer of those vocabulary words so they can acquire more of the meaning of the word is generally a good way to go. So it speaks to the amount of repetition that students need. They can hear a highly contextualized, useful word one time and then hear it again later, but we want to give them a good chance of acquiring it fully and robustly in their system. So again, a little bit of hedging here, but that's, you know, as with all things, everything is relative. Yeah. So back to the study, they also were like, textbooks are rigid and follow rigid lexical and grammatical progression. And I said, amen, sister. So what they did, because they're working with really little kids, they can't exactly teach them textbook grammar and stuff like that. They're just doing, and it's also, you know, an immersion set up, so they are just doing the language in both languages and doing the things that they would do for developing children of the age in both languages. They wanted to they wanted to figure out a couple different things. Their research questions were the following. If they do some shared reading of six specific texts where they read them repeatedly, do the results from those shared readings about how students acquired new vocabulary, do they depend on how long the student has been in the program? AKA, if a student has had been in this bilingual program for longer, do they acquire new vocabulary more easily? So their second question is, do their learning outcomes resulting from shared reading depend on the category of analyzed word? And what they mean by that is if it is a concrete noun like flower and you can point at a flower and be like, that's a flower. Or if someone's like jumping and you can like be like, look, they're clearly jumping on the page, versus something a little bit more abstract for a little kid, which is like scolding, which is, you know, an action that someone does, but it is speaking, but with a certain emotional kind of connotation. That's a little bit more abstract. So to go back to the research, if they're reading children's books that have these new terms for them, are they only going to acquire the concrete terms that are visually contextualized in the books, or are they also acquiring abstract terms? And finally, they also knew the kind of linguistic backgrounds of the students in this scenario of, you know, who has a German-speaking parent at home, who is a non-native German-speaking parent, who speaks only Polish at home, those sorts of things. And so they wondered if using the shared reading intervention of reading these six books multiple times would have different effects for different families based on their linguistic backgrounds. Because the kids are so young, they had to use kind of more, I would say they can, what they say is they refrained from using explicit competency tests. So the kids are still learning to read and write and stuff like that at all in general in their lives. And so they can't be like, sit them down to give them a test. And something that they wrote in the thing is that test instructions are sometimes harder than the tasks, which made me LOL, because I don't know how many people I've met, very competent people who don't do well on specific tests. I'm thinking like the OPI and the WPT, because they don't understand the format of the test, right?
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, this is an aside, but like recently, like I put up this poster in my classroom that says, how much Spanish should I be using? Essentially. And so, you know, I've got it set at like 90%, thanks Actful. And then like I show like 10% and then give some like reasons for why it would be okay to use English. And which also like on a side, maybe this would be a topic for a future episode, but has had more and more publications about translanguaging in second language or additional language classroom. It's interesting to see. Typically, translanguaging has been examined like through like heritage learners or like English language learners, but not necessarily in a classroom context. So like going back to like the directions being more complicated than the task. Yeah, you know, like why would I waste time on super complex directions in the language when, like, if it's going to take 15 minutes to explain the directions in Spanish in a way that they understand, and then they don't have enough time to actually do the activity, then what was there a real benefit to spending the time to get the directions in Spanish? And like, I tell students, like, that's my 10%. Like my 10% is that like I want to make sure that we can get to the Spanish quicker, and I want to get to the Spanish thinking quicker. So if I need to, like, that's when I would switch to English and make sure that the instructions are clear so we can use the most of our time. Anyway, that was just an aside about directions being complicated.
But I think that it ties totally into kind of how they treated the students, is that they want to get to, these students were learning German. They wanted to get to the German quicker. They didn't want to get the students bogged down in testing environments. Instead, they wanted to sort of access the implicit knowledge that these students had. And so what they used, I can tell you about the procedure was this. First they selected books. They selected six different picture books based on some, whether or not they're appropriate developmentally for kids who are, you know, the ages 3 to 6. Were they linguistically appropriate? Did they cover a wide range of content things? you know, did they, were they nice looking books, good to look at, that they would be exciting to a kid? So the first had to select the books. They picked six books that they list in the study. And so if you're a German teacher and you're interested, I might try to share these on my socials, because I was like, I want to read those to my children who are 14 to 18. Anyways, after that, they kind of parsed out the vocab that was in each book and categorized it into the three categories that I described earlier. Is it something that is concrete that you could point at in the book? Is it a fairly concrete action that is also able to be differentiated, whether or not someone is running versus hopping or jumping, those sorts of things? Or is it something more abstract? The example that they had up in here was scolding that I brought up. So they kind of they sifted through the vocabulary in these books and decided, you know, sorted these words into different ones. And I'm forgetting how they chose which words essentially they were testing on, but they chose what they were going to test on. And then they did a pretest of the students' vocabulary knowledge. They did the shared reading sessions. They did three times a week for each book. So I think they read each book multiple times, which if you are in the vicinity often of a young child, you know how that goes. You know, my family can recite Madeline by heart because my niece wants Madeline all the time. So they read the books repeatedly. And again, to give the students exposure to the words multiple times in the context. And so they did three times a week for each book. And then they did the post-tests. And these tests were, the post-tests that they used were more implicit in knowledge. It was like picture matching for vocabulary terms. And then they did a test sheet, and I'm not exactly sure how they used the test sheet, the students' knowledge and how they would have tested that, but it was more implicit and more, it was not like,
so listeners,
define this word. Yeah.
And listeners, if you do have access to the article, they do have more, an appendix with a couple of the instruments that they used for the testing. So you can check those out as well.
Okay. Cool. The subjects of the test, again, were students who were in a 50-50 German-Polish bilingual kindergarten. The test subjects were 3 to 6 years old. They had spent a range of 1 to 33 months in this specific kindergarten. So German kindergartens are more like, you know, extensive preschools and stuff like that. And there's roughly 31 students. And again, we have information about the language backgrounds of these students. Just about half of them spoke primarily Polish at home, and we're learning German through this bilingual kindergarten. So what were their findings after administering pre and post tests, which looked like something, and then reading to the students these picture books repeatedly? Their first question was about, does length of study in the program determine how much vocabulary they acquire? And yes, the longer, the better. The more time that students had in the kindergarten, the more likely they were to experience success in acquiring new vocabulary. Which I think the note to us is that when we think of our students acquiring, they're going to start with a small amount of words and a very small amount of words, and their vocabulary is going to grow pretty slowly compared to later when they have a very strong basis and are able to read more extensively and independently. Then their vocab is going to blossom very quickly if they're able to get their hands on a mix of good reading materials and listening materials. And it also speaks for the need for longer program lengths for all language acquisition. So extending down into the middle school, into the primary school, into the kindergartens. There are a lot of countries in the world that are far ahead of the United States in this regard. I mean, it bums me out a little bit when I hear about them, because I want that for our kids. I want them to have the chance to come out with advanced language skills, not just solid intermediate, which feels like my goal a lot of the time. But
we is good.
Yeah, no, it's survival. It's survival. It's able to function in the country. It's able to have that basis of acquisition so that they can continue that vocabulary growth like I just described. But the next result, the question that they looked at is whether or not the word category, so the abstraction of the word, affected how successful students were in acquiring it. And it does not appear that it did. It did not appear that more abstract words were harder for students to acquire, or that the very concrete stuff was easiest to acquire. Students were about equally successful in all of these categories. So we can use children's books for the acquisition of more concrete stuff. Like, again, oh, look, and you see a rabbit, point at the rabbit, say rabbit in the language, and be like, oh, the rabbit's running around, the rabbit's jumping, the rabbit's doing this, the rabbit's doing that. But also a little bit more abstract stuff. So things like emotions and related to thinking, abstract ideas and reactions and internal worlds of people, animal characters, whatever it is. So the word categories didn't really have an effect because the books provided, again, visual and verbal context for all this new vocabulary. Any of those words made sense because they were contextualized heavily by the use of very rich picture books and reading experiences. The final question was whether or not the home language environment, so like whether or not your parents speak German at home or if they're, you know, non-native bilinguals or if they've had experience living abroad in a German-speaking country, what effect that had. And it had a smaller effect than the authors anticipated. So obviously students with German in their home had a slightly better time acquiring the new vocabulary over the course of the study. It was not as pronounced as the authors expected it to be, which says to us that even if our students are only getting their language in our schools, in our classes, we can still have a pretty profound effect on their language acquisition. So how can we extrapolate this to kind of the sleighs out of this in this ungatekeeping of this article? Books and stories in rich visual context provide the visual context for new vocabulary, but it also provides a verbal context. You're talking about the book as you're reading it with students. And so you're providing them a context within to link meaning to vocabulary using the concrete images, but also the abstract sort of feelings and thoughts that are coming up over the course of the story. So that is that sounds like a powerful win for all of our languages. I'm just going to read a quote that I'm looking at. Among the results obtained, this finding stands out as a pivotal confirmation of the study's foundational assumption. Shared reading can be considered an effective approach to fostering the development of lexical competence in second language for children. So, reading aloud to kids is just good for them. It helps continue their learning. It helps grow their vocabulary. It gives them something interesting to think about. And it's overall a great thing. The educators, this was not necessarily part of the study, but the educators involved who did the shared story reading with the students said it had a very positive social and emotional and cognitive effect on their students. So they reported, they're like, yeah, we had a great time. This is great. It's a great way to learn a language. And the kind of the question remains coming out of the study is like, how can we didacticize these picture books to make them really more powerful, greater experiences for our student, more likely that they acquire new vocabulary through the context? How do intonation, dramatization, personal engagement influence how much students actually get out of the experience? Consider this article, which talked about the effects of this multimodal learning, ungatekept.
That came to mind as you were talking about, like, how can we make the text more for students, like, involve them more in it and whatnot. And something that I've been trying to really work on, especially with my level 4 students in reading, like trying to be better at parking and pausing. So like I do try to encourage students to let me know the moment I say a word that they don't know, because my intention is not to confuse them. So if I've done that, I need to know. So if it's a new word that a student asks for, I want to try to like park on that word for a little bit and like try to milk it as much as I can, use it in a bunch of different contexts, like, oh, this is a new word for you right now in this moment. I want to again maybe jumpstart your acquisition of that word or structure or whatever. So let's take a step back from whatever it is that we're reading just for a moment and see what other contexts we can use it in. Again, just to kind of like jumpstart acquisition so that if the word comes up later in the reading, hopefully we can process it quicker when it comes up again.
Yeah. And so that's using those skills of personalization, of circling, of, you know, this is an example of this, but not of this. You know, I'm thinking again, the word from the study was scolding. So my brain just keeps going to that. You know, like, oh, like which characters in TV scold their children? So you could be like Marge Simpson scolding Homer. You could talk about, you know, the you know, people scolding each other, whatever that comes up, but just using that word over and over again in a bunch of different contexts. So they're getting lots of exposures to it. And that is a skill that comes from kind of like the universe of PQA, of personalized questions and answers, is taking a new vocabulary term, sitting with it, and then just trying to make it as personal to the students in the class as possible.
Another girl boss moment. I think there have been more and more comm-based readers coming out that are more storybook-esque. If you want to do like a shared reading with your students, that would be like a good, maybe a good resource to look at. I know, again, sorry, this is for Spanish teachers, but I know Senior Woolley has released a children's book recently called No Somos Amigos. And it is, like, I cackled in it a few times. It was silly because, you know, mayonnaise is a family tradition.
Interpret what you just said.
Mayonnaise is a family tradition. If you know, you know. Anyway, so like, I do think if we're looking out at like comprehension-based reader publishers, I think there are more storybook type books coming up, but that also doesn't mean that you can't use authentic children's books.
Totally. If you find a children's book that you think that from the target culture, from the target language that you think is interesting, or even if it's just a children's book that you like and you think might have a good message for your chicken nuggets, then maybe you use, instead of the skills of reading the book aloud and doing kind of a read aloud style of directly the text on the page, maybe you do something more akin to a picture talk where you're looking at what's happening on the page. Again, that's heavily contextualized. You're looking what's happening on the page and you're asking personalized questions about what they see. You're describing what you see and linking new vocabulary, kind of like we said, with personalization and examples. So that way you can use the book still. You don't have to read the words on the page, but you can use the pictures, you can use the visuals and the kind of context of the story to still provide a very rich language experience for your students that also can have an element of, you know, moral and intellectual development, if you should so choose. Another angle to take is using the approach of story listening. I think story listening is not just a technique to the creator. It is an element of a whole approach, but many comprehension-based teachers have adapted it into their practice alongside other comprehension-based practices, is what I want to say. And that is a way of... Sure. And with the principle of that, these classic, often fairy tales or stories from folklore, or even real life stories from the news and people's lives, can be told using comprehension-aiding supplementation that helps create the visual contexts and the verbal context for students to acquire lots of new language with these like mass input techniques and broad, rich vocabulary. So even if you don't have a book, you can still look for very rich stories from the target language and adapt the language down as you need, but also use rich language that helps students grow in their vocabulary very effectively.
Great.
I would say also, like, if us high school teachers take ourselves so seriously, we're like, I got to high school to teach the content because I am so smart. But also sometimes we just let loose and have some fun. Pick a picture book. I have fantasized about like having kids, you know, sign up. It's essentially like more like a class party situation, like sign up to bring food and maybe make it extra cozy in some specific way. I'm like, I don't know. Kids often wear pajamas to school, so I don't feel like that adds an extra layer of fun specialness to it, but we could figure something out, you know, like, oh, maybe they store their stuffed animals in the classroom or something, and we just like really go for it. Just something nice, play, you know, children's music, sing songs, you know, play little games and stuff like that. But then have the focal point be the experience of some sort of children's book that you hype up to them ahead of time. And again, I think we teach humans in addition to the languages that we teach. And so it's okay to relax a little bit, loosen our grip on everything that's happening. We are not only giving our students linguistic input, we're also teaching them about life and the world and each other. And this can be one way to do that.
Any final thoughts on this article, Ben?
I think the moral of the story is read a book.
Yeah.
Go read a book.
Go read a book. Because reading is what?
Fundamental.
All right. Well, I think that's all then. Thanks again, everyone, for listening to us yap a little bit and make sure that if you have not already done so, you have gotten the proficiency-based instruction teaching grammar for proficiency by Catherine Ritz and Mike Travers. You can get it on the actual website, and we're finishing up chapter 2 as we are recording, and we'll start looking into chapter 3. What was the date? The 15th?
Yeah, the week beginning the 15th.
The week beginning the 15th. So, find us on our socials, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, Facebook. I think those are the ones that we've got. And follow along, interact. We're still getting the hang of all of the social media stuff, so bear with us. But when we post something, interact, and we'll do our best to respond and like continue the conversation offline. So until next time, go out and slay. Bye.